I'm Doreen Howard. We're in the DeWitt facility today. We will be interviewing Mark Warner. If you guys could go ahead and introduce yourselves.
My name's John Fedewa.
Marilyn Coulter.
And I'm Mark Warner.
And could you spell your last name?
W-A-R-N-E-R.
Okay, and your address?
6110 Coleman Road, East Lansing, 48823.
Okay. Are you married, and do you have any children?
Married and two children. Their ages are 26 and 24.
Okay. Where were you born?
St. John's, just 20 minutes north of here.
Okay.
Small farming community.
Were you a farmer?
My grandparents were. Both grandparents on both sides were. And we had, growing up, we had what we considered a small farm. It didn't really produce anything other than what we needed ourselves. So it was small on a scale compared to farmers that produce, you know, stuff for market. But it was something that my family wanted to carry on.
Very nice. Your educational background?
St. John's in high school and elementary school, and then LCC, and then Michigan State.
Oh, okay. What is your, did you have a degree from Michigan State?
It's in history.
In history. That's very nice. Do you have a military background at all?
No.
Okay. And what did you do before you hired in to fish?
I worked construction in the summer months and into the fall months. Because I liked being outdoors, and it also was a way to earn some money and save for school. So it was one of those things that I was interested in, and I liked creating things with my hands. And I worked in, we did mostly rough framing, that kind of construction, farm construction, some pole barns, some additions on houses, a few new houses, but mainly in the rough framing portion of general construction.
And what is your seniority
date? GM seniority is August 7th, 78. Okay. And I came to the body plant in March of 81.
Okay. What brought you to come to General Motors to seek a job?
When I was working construction, the company that I worked for was relatively small, so they didn't have a lot of additional income or fringe benefits other than your wage. So I was looking for something where I could earn more and have some additional benefits. And it wasn't that I was seeking out GM. I was looking for higher-paying jobs, and heard through somebody, I can't remember who, a friend, that GM was taking applications. So I put one in with not much thought of it until I got a call shortly thereafter for an interview. So I must have been in the right place at the right time.
Think back to that day when you put in your application. What was some of the circumstances surrounding the whole application process? How many people were there, and what did that entail?
Well, I remember I was, it was in the spring. I'm going to guess it was sometime, maybe late spring, May or June. And I was working construction in the daytime and going to LCC in the afternoons. And then in the evenings, I was working as a bartender. And heard that they were taking applications. So I went with some friends after work, after we got done working at the bar late at night, and got in line to put our applications in, and ended up standing in line all night and then putting the application in, you know, when they started, I think it was 8 or 9 in the morning. So I put my application in after being up all night and didn't really expect much of it, but it seems like there were probably a couple hundred people. I remember the line was a long line down the sidewalk, and we all stood around and talked all night. And didn't have high expectations out of it, especially they did a little, I think the application we put in, and then there was a short interview. I went away with the feeling that I didn't impress the interviewer, so I didn't expect much. So I was surprised when I got a call. later on.
So let's go back to that first day. What was your experience? What department did you hire into? And describe.
It was a whole new world. Like. Growing up in St. John's, it was, like I said, it was kind of a small town then. And coming into Lansing and working in an environment that was a lot more diverse than what I was used to. A lot of different kinds of people. I was used to, you know, small town farmer's mentality, which was unknown to me at that time. It was very narrow and narrow view. So it was like an education. And at first you walk in and you're kind of wide-eyed and overwhelmed, but after a while I liked it. And the thing I came to realize early was that the thing I liked about it was the diversity of people. And I'm kind of a people person, and I like meeting a lot of different kinds of people, a lot of different kinds of people that have interesting backgrounds. And I've always viewed GM's workforce as their most important, valuable asset, because if you get to know people and you network, like I kind of do, you kind of lock away in your mind, okay, this person knows a lot about that, or farming, and this person might know a lot about science, and this person might know a lot about politics or smooching. and you kind of remember these things, and then you go, okay, if I ever need this resource or that resource, then you remember. And I always thought that GM had the greatest group of kind of a smorgasbord of research or resources. That was one of the things that always appealed to me about GM, was that there were people from such a wide background that you could always, if you didn't know them personally and you needed something, you could ask around amongst your friends and say, you know anybody that knows something about fixing a Chevy pickup, or if you know anybody about knows anything about fixing, you know, my eaves troughs, or you could, and if you didn't know where to find that, you could find somebody that did know. So, oh yes, so and so over here, go talk to her, you know. And I always felt like GM never knew how great of I'd say it seemed like an endless resource that they have out there. I still don't feel like they utilize that like they should or could. So
that first day you come in here and you look around and you see the diverse workforce that you'll be working with, and what department did they put you on, in what job did they put you on? And being a new hire, a lot of the groups tend to want to feel out the person and see how they react to things. Did they do any new hire pranks to you?
I hired into the warehouse, and it's a little different over there, whereas I don't think there were as many hijinks and pranks that went on. I actually hired into a small area that was kind of processing parts for outgoing shipment. Mm-hmm. And I think I was kind of taken in by this group. It were mainly people that I thought had really high seniority, I think. And I felt like a small extended family. It was kind of really comfortable. There were a couple of older women that worked in there I knew that were very close to retirement, and they reminded me of my grandmothers. And there were some other guys that reminded me some of my uncles. And even though these were people that had much different backgrounds than what I was used to, it still felt like they had your back. You know, they could take care of you. And there was a lot of advice doled out early on. Okay, this is what you want to do. This is what you don't want to do. You don't want to miss any time. You always want to be on time. You never want to take a day off in your first 90 days. I remember that was what everybody said. Be on time and don't ever miss work. Because it was a small area, I didn't get a lot of outside influence until after I'd been there for a while. When I first hired in, I remember feeling this is quite a bit different, and it felt like a learning experience, and it was like, okay, I'm going to soak this all up, because this is really kind of nice. Yeah, I really felt surprised by that because it didn't seem... At first, when you walk into this huge building and you drive into this big city, I thought, wow, this is really going to be hard. This is really going to be strange, and I don't know if I'm going to like this. And it, you went through some of those doubts early on, first few weeks. I remember thinking, man, did I make a mistake? You know, do I really want to work inside this big old dusty warehouse? This big old building compared to, you know, being able to do the things that I had done growing up and before I hired in. I was always outdoors, and I'm an outdoor person anyway, and I all of a sudden, you know, being indoors for 8 hours a day was really, really different. And it was kind of a big shock. And those were the biggest things that were hard for me. But then once you get to know people, and it didn't take only a few weeks, and you started thinking, okay, yeah, these people are starting to embrace me and starting to welcome me. And it was kind of, okay, this isn't going to be so bad. And maybe I can do this.
Marilyn Coulter?
Yeah. How was it, because you were an outside person, and how long was it before you started to work on the actual assembly line?
Well, we had in the warehouse over there, there were small assembly lines, but nothing like working at the body plant, where you actually are producing a product from beginning to end. Over there, it was filling orders, packaging the orders, and shipping them down to an area where they packed them into trucks or into rail cars. There are a lot of, if you can imagine, small assembly lines, like what we have in the body plant, feeder lines in the body shop where they might sub-assembly a wheel housing area or the cushion room where they built just the seats. Those type of small assembly lines, there were a lot of those over there.
So what was the transition like when you went from the warehouse and then you came into the Fisher body? Where you're tied to an assembly line.
It was, the work itself was a little bit more physical, but it wasn't all that different because it was just on a grander scale. So, and you could actually see a product being made, so in a way it was a little bit more satisfying than just filling orders. At the warehouse, I thought it was a, one of the things about the work was it felt like it was monotonous and unfulfilling. And here, it's not a whole lot, or when I say here, I mean at the body plant, it wasn't a whole lot more fulfilling or satisfying, but at the same point, you could walk from the beginning of the assembly process to the end of the assembly process and see an actual product that you had of hand in hand. So in that aspect, it was a little bit more satisfying. And the people are what I have always embraced and liked about working at the body plant. There are many more, and I enjoy being around more people.
So did you find that the culture of the people was different? Any differences between the ones that worked at the warehouse and the ones that were in the body plant on the line?
Not a lot, you know. As I talked to people and got to know people, I found a lot of similarities in my own background where a lot of them felt like, okay, when they first hired in, they didn't probably hire him with the intention of staying 30 years and retiring. A lot of them probably said, okay, this is a job that pays me really well or well enough, and I have other goals, like maybe I'm going to save money for college, or maybe I'm going to save money for a new boat or for my kids or whatever. And I think a lot of them started out, at least it felt like, the same kind of intentions that I did. It's like, okay, I'm going to save money, go to school, and this isn't something I probably will want to do for 30 years. I'm going to leave here in 5 years, or I'm going to leave here in 7 years. And that, I think, it felt like there was a lot of people that started that way and stayed the same way that I did. It's like 5 years came and went, and you did a little bit of what you thought you would. And then next thing you know, you had that new car, and then maybe you bought a house, and then you thought, well, this is, yeah, all right, maybe I'll stay another 2 years, or maybe I'll, all right, my new goal is now I'm going to stay 10 and get out. You know, by then I'll have my degree, and next thing you know, it's like, okay, you've got a bigger mortgage and another new car and maybe a couple more kids, or, and it's like, okay, well, I've got 15 years in now. I'm halfway there. Maybe this wouldn't be such a bad. And I felt like a lot of people started that way and ended that way, with, like I did. And you realize that working full-time and going to school was easier when you were a teenager. And as the time went on, it got more difficult. Well, family and life and everything becomes more time-consuming, and you feel like, okay, that school is still important, but it keeps getting bumped down one more notch on the priority list. And it took a long time. I remember I would go to school, and I'd stop for a while or a couple semesters, and I'd go back for a couple more semesters, or one on, one off. And I remember thinking, God, am I ever going to get there, and do this? And as time went by, you realize, okay, I've got, I'm halfway to a pension, or I'm two-thirds of the way to a pension, or I'm three-quarters of the way to a pension now, and you realize, well, maybe it wouldn't be such a bad idea to stay here and draw a pension and then move on and start. Because in this day and age, it's not uncommon. I think it's uncommon for people to stay in one place 30 years like we do. I think in professional careers, a lot of people change much more frequently than we do. And I've seen that and observed it in my personal life a lot. People reinvent themselves, change jobs, that kind of thing.
Before we go, I have one other question I want to ask you. When you came in from St. John's and you came into the facility, there are a lot of people like you. Was there any preconceived notions that you had about the factory workers that you found to be different once you became one?
That's really hard to say, because I didn't have any notion at all of factory life or workers, because I didn't know anything about it. All I knew, I had heard from some friends that they paid good. And that was one of my goals when I came and applied. I remember thinking, this will make it easier to save for school and maybe make life a little more comfortable. So at that juncture in my life, as a teenager, I don't think you really think about what those people are like. You just think about, okay, that's more money than I'm earning now, and it has health insurance. And so you thought, that's worth putting an application in there.
So by you going to school while you were working, I take it that you took advantage of the UAWGM negotiated benefit of tuition assistance program?
Yes. And that was the other thing about staying at GM. I remember thinking, okay, they have this program that will pay for the majority of school, and I'd be really unintelligent if I didn't take advantage of it. So it was another thing that said, okay, you're making good wages, you have health insurance, and you have a TAP program that pays for school. Why would you leave? If you can take classes and go to school and get the majority of it paid for, with my resources and my background, I didn't know of a better avenue to do that, to reach the goals that I wanted to do. So I think that was another major advantage to staying. And it just fell in with all the other things that, next thing you know, 5 years came and went, and you're thinking, okay, I've got 6.5 years in now. Okay, I'll stay 10. and then next thing you know, 10 went flying by. And you thought, well, I still got TAP. And if they had ever done away with TAP, it might have been easier to leave. But I don't think it would have been an easy decision. I think I probably, because of the wage that we earned, and I think it would have been, the only way I would have left is if I would have had, fell into a, or found a, another career that said, okay, we will help you with your school, and you can earn as much, and we have a more rewarding career for you. And I think those are rare. Those opportunities are very rare. And so it made it easier to stay.
You said that you were married and you had children. What shift did you hire in on, and how did working here affect your family life, and what adjustments did you have to make in your personal life?
Well, at the warehouse when I first started in, they had three shifts over there. They still have three shifts because they don't have the demands of making up lost production or overtime like they do at the assembly line. And I hired in on day shift, which wasn't unlike what I was doing currently. I think the difference was only about a half an hour different earlier. So that wasn't much of an adjustment, but I didn't stay on that shift very long. I went to the afternoon shift. I think I was bumped probably after about 4 months, and stayed. I was fortunate enough to be, I think, in a small group that kind of fell in between the cracks as far as staying in one place or getting bumped to and locked into one shift that was usually reserved for lower seniority. I, for some reason, had the luxury of either getting bumped or being able to apply for and move into different shifts. I thought throughout my career at GM, fairly easy. I don't know why. It seemed like I got bumped a lot, but I always got bumped to something I wanted, which it worked out for me. I don't remember too many times where I was bumped when I didn't want to be. I worked. I think I had about 6 months seniority, and I worked the third shift, which worked out really well for going to school. We would get out at 7 a.m., and I would go right. I would apply for early morning classes and go right to LCC and then go home in the afternoons and get some rest. And it allowed me to have what I thought was the best situation, which was most people work during the day, have the evenings with their family, and then sleep at night, where I went to school during the day, had the evenings with my family, and worked at night. So I thought it was just the opposite, or just, you know, the... And I also thought, okay, I tried to look for the positives in every situation. I thought, well, the advantage to this is I have third shift premium, so I actually had a little bit extra money, and I could go home midday and get some rest before, you know, your family life would begin. And I would usually get up around 5 or 6 at night and still have the evening hours with the family. So when I went to that shift, there was an opportunity. I was going to get bumped, and I don't remember where the... I had a couple of choices, and I was fortunate enough to say, okay, I can make this move or that move. And I thought, well, I'll take the third shift. And it actually worked out pretty well for me, and I held that shift for about 5 or 6 months. I remember it being a couple of semesters. And I thought, this is pretty good. So in that aspect, early on in my GM career, it was pretty good. And then the economy changed, and things slowed down over there, so we started getting laid off. And that's how I ended up going from the warehouse to the body assembly plant. In the first 2.5 years at GM, I think I was laid off about 6 times from the warehouse. And every time, not every time, a lot of times it was only for a few weeks. Sometimes it was 4 weeks, sometimes it was 5 or 6. And usually if I was off more than a month, we would get called in the area hire provision. And I worked at the main plant twice. I worked at the stamping plant once, and I worked at the body shop or body plant twice. And the second time I went back to the body shop or body plant, I decided that, you know, I had talked to a lot of people at that point, and I realized that the work here was steady. Everybody that I had talked to said, we don't think that there'll ever be a slowdown enough where you would be laid off like your history of. Yeah, 'cause I remember saying I'd been laid off 6 times in 20 months, and it was unsettling to have that kind of those periods of unemployment. So I made a decision to stay at Fisher Body when I got, because every time there would be a small pickup in the market, the warehouse would call and say, you have return rights, we need you to come back. And I'd always say, well, how long for? And they'd say, well, we can't guarantee, you know. And sometimes you'd go back to work for 9 weeks and then you'd be laid off again. And that was difficult. And although the work was more physical at the body plant and chose to stay. And it was a pretty good decision. Over the years, we've been laid off a lot less, and we also have, or had for quite a few years, you know, the luxury of having a summertime changeover. That was nice. I like those few weeks off every summer. It's a good time to enjoy time with family.
Mark, can you please tell us what changeover is?
Changeover was the changeover of model from the current year production to the following year production. And sometimes if the redesigns were drastic, there would be a longer changeover where they'd have to do more retooling, where the general assembly would be laid off for longer periods of time and maintenance and skilled trades would complete the changes needed for the new model run.
So,
Doreen Howard, so your transition from the parts plants to the body plant, you went from a three-shift operation to a two-shift operation. How did that impact you? Did you come into our plant on first or second shift?
Well, again, I feel like I was fortunate because I came in at a time when I didn't feel like I was ever locked into the low seniority shift, of which was second. I actually hired in on the day shift, stayed on the day shift for about 2 or 3 months, and got to work with a lot of higher seniority employees and learned the transfer process and learned how to put in transfers and learned how to use the system to find a job that would suit my needs. And I think I was fortunate in the fact that I was able to move around. Even though I didn't have a lot of seniority, I felt like I spent a good amount of time on the day shift, which was the preferred shift. Sometimes on the afternoon shift, which was mostly summer times, didn't mind that too much. Felt like I got into some groups that allowed me to get back to day shift when I needed to or when I wanted to, and that was usually in the fall and winter months, so that it was easier to take classes.
Now, you talked about your work family. Is there any particular coworkers that impacted you significantly, or can you talk about some of the coworkers and the things that you maybe did during your working hours in the facility to entertain yourselves or make the day go by a little smoother?
Well, one of the fondest memories I have is working in the cushion room. The cushion room was where they build the seats, and the cushion room was kind of isolated. It was out in an area that was what I felt like was surrounded by materials storage areas. We were between the trim shop and the body shop, and it was kind of like we had our own area that was isolated, but there was such a good group of people out there that it was a lot of fun to work there. There was always a feeling of when you worked in the cushion room that you took care of other cushion room people, and everybody, we kind of, because we were so isolated, we kind of entertained ourselves. It was a really good group of people. I was working utility out there, which is absentee replacement operators. I didn't have a regular assigned job. I would fill in for people who were on vacation or sick. And so I got to move around, and which, when I was younger, was easier to do. I used to learn jobs easily, and it gave me the opportunity to meet a lot more people than if you had a regular assignment. So I knew just about everybody in the cushion room, and I liked the group that we were with. I worked the afternoon shift there, although it didn't always work the afternoon shift. Sometimes we, being utility, we got a chance to work both shifts during deer season and other parts of the year when they were looking for double shifters. So I had a chance to work both shifts. But it was still a unique environment out there in the fact that we were kind of, you knew no one was going to come and help you out, so you had to take care of each other out there. And it was kind of, a fun environment. A lot of people were a lot of fun, and I still have a lot of those friendships to this day that, you know, you look back and run into these people, whether they've stayed in trim or worked in different areas. Like, some of them have gone to the body shop, some have gone to the paint shop, some of them have left GM. But you see, when I see one of those people, I always have a good smile, and I have a good smile return, because if we remember what it was like, it kind of felt like a fraternity of that I have noticed some people have when they were in the service together. You know, it's like that period of your life where you experienced a closeness that people share, it seems like, for a lifetime.
You talked about having a fun environment out there. What did you do for fun?
Well, there was a lot of loud radios, a lot of what I would call rambunctious personalities. It seemed like the Cushion Room, I don't know if it was intentional or by accident, but it seemed to get a lot of the colorful personalities. There were a lot of people that were fun just to be around, and you could, it wouldn't take very much to get them into a jovial mood.
Did you have dinners, or did you play cards with anyone at lunch? What type of activities did you do during the
work? We had a few dinners. I don't recall a lot of dinners, but yes, we had a lot of, there was a lot of games and card playing, and it seemed like we would get together after work, a lot of the people from the department that I was in, a lot of times, and spend personal time outside together. So it was a really close-knit group, and when I look back at it, there was a group of utility persons like myself that to this day we're real close, because we shared a, like I said, we had to kind of look out for each other out there. I enjoyed that a lot.
You were at a couple different facilities. Explain what you saw as far as the differences between the supervisory techniques between one facility and another.
Working at different plants, there were similarities and then some differences. The body plant and the general assembly or main plant were most similar, except that at the afternoon shift at the main plant seemed to have less involvement by the supervisors and the management team over there. I didn't work there for a long, long time, so I really don't have strong feelings about it, but it seemed like it was run more by group leaders or team leaders or pickup repairmen that took care of the areas. It seemed like the supervisor was there if there were to, you know, take attendance, pay people, and if there were some kind of major problems. But I think the workers themselves, it felt like they took more of an active role in running the area. And it ran good. It seemed like everybody knew their responsibilities and their jobs, and they took care of them the best they could. And it seemed like it ran good over there.
And how did that compare to the body plant?
The body plant, it seemed like there were more what I considered engineering problems, or it felt like engineering problems. It seemed like there were more fit problems, more mechanical problems where things didn't go together correctly. It felt like the chassis side of the assembly process felt like it was less fit problems. That's not really a good way to put it, but when we built cars at the chassis, it seemed like the body part was something that came down and sat on it, and everything went together the way it was supposed to over there. Whereas here, there were a lot of, it never felt like it was engineered well, so that we couldn't build it smoothly over here. But I don't remember it being a huge difference, other than the fact that I remember the line never stopped at Olsenville, and there were always problems and breakdowns and things that stopped the line over here. It seemed like more to me.
I was also interested in the differences in the actual environmental aspects of the different plants that you were in. You know, were they loud? Were they noisy? Were they clean or dirty? What's some of the differences that you saw between the different facilities as far as in the actual environments that you were in?
The plant itself, I worked in General Assembly, Building 70, at Main Plant, which is where they used to build the Cutlass, which was known as the C-Line here at Body Plant. The building itself and the facility seemed cleaner and newer. It looked a lot newer by decades. Although the work in the General Assembly line was dirtier. So it was interesting to note that the work here at the Body Plant, I felt, was a lot cleaner. But the building was much older. So you had a dirtier plant to work in, but easier, cleaner work. The chassis side seemed to be much dirtier work. There's a lot more fluids involved, a lot more grease, but in a cleaner building or a newer building. It seemed like a newer facility.
Also, could you elaborate on the safety-wise, some of the changes that you saw between the different facilities as far as procedures that they had in place for different safety issues?
I always felt that the chassis plant had the potential for more dangerous or more accidents, although I never witnessed any. It felt like you were around a process that had much more potential for injuries, although I never witnessed any. Around here, it felt like there were more safety precautions in place. And I think the fact that you're building in the General Assembly line over there, you were putting together engines, putting together drivetrains, putting together exhaust systems and wheels, and then putting the body onto the chassis, it felt like much more of an assembly process because it was bigger, and you got to see the complete process come together. Whereas here, it felt like working on a car, you build a lot of it, but there's still a lot of it that's unfinished when it leaves here. When I say here, I'm referring to the Body Plant. I always felt like we were a vendor to the final assembly plant.
Do you have a best memory that you can recall, or a favorite person or something funny that happened that you'd like to share with us?
My best memory isn't anything specific. It is the friendships and the people that I've gotten to know over the years. I feel like I've made a lot of acquaintances, and I have known a lot of different people that have come and gone. But the thing that I remember, or I will remember always, are some of the friendships that I've made over the years. And I don't know of another place that I've ever experienced this many different kinds of people come together. In a small, concentrated area, and I always find that interesting.
Mark, Marilyn Coulter, while you worked for your 20-some-odd years at Fisher Body, the building itself alone had gone through a lot of different programs and processes. Were there any specific processes that had impacted you? Were there any that you were involved in? Were there any that you felt really helped to make Fisher Body the capital?
Well, I've always felt like the auto industry, GM in particular, has been too conservative and too slow to react to political and economic issues from the outside. And in that aspect, looking at it, it's been frustrating because working on the from the labor point of view, it has always felt to me that our input or our influence over how the car is produced has meant very, very little to the decisions in the process. So from that aspect, you kind of, from my point of view, I felt like I can't give my heart and soul into changes and decisions on car making because of the dead ends and the frustration or the lack of seemed like sincerity of our input into the cars and the way they're made. And I think that's more evident today when you look at the current economic situation in the global economy and the political atmosphere, that GM seems to be either incredibly naive or stubborn in changing and adapting to a changing world. And the auto industry, I think, is sadly is a dying dinosaur because of, it feels like one of those companies that is going to hang on as long as they can by their fingernails, but that eventually is probably not going to succeed and it's going to continually shrink. At least that's my opinion. I've enjoyed working for GM, but it's been frustrating in that point, or looking at it from that aspect.
Doreen Howard, you were at different facilities with General Motors. You've met a lot of people. You said you were laid off and came back and laid off and returned once again. How does the closing of the body plant personally affect you?
That has always felt, we knew it was coming for quite a while. It wasn't this big secret. The exact date of when it happened to me felt like it came on quite suddenly. And as the months have passed since its closing, it saddened me a little bit to feel like it's an end of an era. Because I have always felt like Fisher Body is a part of our history, and especially in the Midwest, and especially in Michigan, where the auto industry has been an important part of the industrialized age. You know, although we are just about to close that chapter, and it's an honor to feel like I've been part of that, and to feel like Fisher Body was something that will be remembered, I hope, fondly, and I hope. It'd be looked on in respect that it was important. But at the same time, it's sad to see that it's closed and it's gone. And that it's hard to imagine that kind of lifestyle continuing for future generations. It may happen, but I think it will change drastically enough that it won't be anywhere near what we remember. What I will remember are, again, the friendships and the people that I've met over the years.
Have you ever purchased any of the vehicles that you've built over the years?
I have been a GM customer for a good portion of my life, but I have not personally owned the products that we have built. So I can say I've bought our company products, many of them, but as far as I've been a pickup truck driver for quite a while, and so I like pickup trucks. And we've always built cars. Although I've liked the Oldsmobile brand is something my family grew up with. We had a lot of Oldsmobiles, and my parents and my grandparents drove a lot of Oldsmobiles. I drove a few Cutlasses when I was younger, but they were older. Vehicles that I had not purchased or not worked on. I've started driving trucks probably a couple of decades ago, and I've always drove, since then I've drove trucks.
final question, is there anything at all that you wanted to talk about that we have not touched on?
I'm happy to see that this project has taken place. I've always felt that there was always a need to have a historical record that would kind of set the record straight. I think the auto worker, the American auto worker, I think is much maligned. I think it's too bad that the stereotype of the auto worker is, I think, way, way, way off. I'm glad that you guys are doing this project, and I'm happy to be part of it. So,
Marilyn,
you said it was maligned. What would you say is the biggest misconception about the auto worker?
I try to view most things that you read in the media or hear on television or radio with a grain of salt, because I believe, probably I felt this way for more than a decade, that media will create a story or report a story with their own agendas in mind and with the point of view that they have to make it interesting, otherwise you're not going to read it or watch it. But at the same time, you have to sell newspapers. And so I think that they will collect, you know, a great deal of facts and use the ones they want to create the story that they want to tell. And I believe that that has always been a part of the story. I don't believe, and I think it's always been it's semi-negative, depending on which point of view is coming from. If you're watching the news, you will hear about big decisions that labor or management have made that create a picture that is very, very incomplete. And a lot of times, especially in the local newspaper media around here, I think the facts that are released or the statements that are released are very biased, one-sided. You hear a GM spokesperson that will come out and make an announcement about this or that, and everybody that works in the labor side will see it or read it and say, where did that come from? or that is so far off that it seems like the UAW needs a spokesperson that is, I want to say, more gutsy to speak up for labor and say, this is how we see it, and that is, you know, the other side, and here's this side. And instead of, I think too many people are too concerned these days with being politically correct, and I think that is very difficult for the general public to interpret. A lot of times you read something and you go, wow, that really sounds bad. But if you knew the whole story and all of the facts, and you were able to form your own opinion, it probably wouldn't be as one-sided as it really sounds. And I think that's a sad fact with multimedia today, is that, you know, I think reporters and editors in particular are under too much pressure to, their bottom line is to sell newspapers, and to sell newspapers you got to create interesting stories, and a lot of times it's pretty negative or all negative, and you don't hear enough, I don't think you hear enough of unbiased equal reporting on the same subject on all sides of the story.
Thank you.
You're
welcome.
Thank you.